Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 264 of the Roguecast, recorded August 6, 2019. You have to be able to take on a drunken seal.
Guys, it's August.
I would not have guessed by the temperature had you not mentioned it.
Yeah, it's really nice out outside.
It's the D&D Dark Sun world.
Yeah, yeah.
Athas, is that the world?
Dark I believe Sun? That is correct, yes.
I think it might feel more like Athas next week. That's just going to be like even worse.
You know, the thing is, guys, I am a proud proponent of summer forever.
Yeah?
I am starting to come around to the fact that maybe it's a little too hot. I think climate change has ruined summer forever.
I think what when it like gets the heat index next week of 114 or 115, we're going to die.
People are going to spontaneously combust in the streets.
Right, what would you like is summer forever, but as viewed from the northwest?
I would like a balmy 72.
Yeah.
as a regular thing.
Hey, San Diego summer?
I still maintain that and this is where I depart from most people, I still maintain I would rather death heat than bitter cold.
Oh man, I want bitter cold. I want snow.
I know, but y'all are in Texas. What are you even doing?
That just makes him treasure it each year.
Isn't climate change going to give us that at some point?
I think it gets folded in there. Yeah, we'll definitely get to an ice age at some point.
Good. I'm hoping for that.
It's going to be day after tomorrow style. Will it just come upon us, and can I dodge it by ducking into a the doorway?
Yeah, the cold wave. You should be able to dodge that. Watch out for the CG wolves.
Okay, I will.
And we have to escape to Mexico in order to survive it.
Was that in that?
That was the end of it. They were crossing the border.
Okay, I couldn't quite remember that.
I actually like that movie.
Yeah, I think if there's anything we want people to take away from today's podcast, it's that The Day After Tomorrow is the bad disaster movie to beat.
Okay, well, that's solved then.
That's rolling.
Let's go on to movie news and TV news and all that kind of thing.
Yep.
So we're still going through the backlog of stuff from San Diego to some degree, so some might be new, some of y'all have heard, but... couple Amazon announcements. One is that they're doing a Jack Reacher TV series.
Yeah. I guess people have forgotten that there was Jack Reacher movies.
Tom Cruise was in it.
Somewhere. He ran, I assume. Did things.
Is Jack Reacher a MP? A former MP
guy?
Yeah,
he's an ex-MP that was honorably discharged, and instead of living a normal life, he roams the Badlands like Kane.
Taking on cases and...
finding
and
himself in trouble.
Bringing justice. Now, I got a quick question. I don't mean to dismiss MPs, but are they like supposed to be like super badasses or anything in particular? I thought they were just like the guys that were like, you can't go past this gate, need to go round up a guy who got drunk.
It depends, but there are MPs that are trained. You have to take on SEALs. You have to take on other people that are much
like,
higher degree.
You mean Navy SEALs.
Yes, not actual SEALs.
Now, does that mean you have to take them on when they're drunk and they're on leave or whatever, and you have to go bring them in?
Yes.
So you have to be able to take on a drunken SEAL.
Yes. they do get some pretty badass training.
Okay.
So that's why, and maybe that doesn't include every MP, but that is Jack Reacher.
So I just like if I see an MP, I should say like, show me some of your SEAL takedown moves.
No, Dave. If you see an MP, it's like they're like the guards, the Buckingham
the British guards. Yeah.
Just try to make them smile or laugh, and, like tickle them. They'll love it.
But there's a ton of source material for this. Lee Child has written, I think, 15 or 20 books.
Have you read any of these books, Dan?
I've read most of them.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's one of those reads that are just quick, fun, popcorn reads.
It feels like a Greg Rucka character.
Yeah, very much.
Atticus Kodiak style?
Atticus Kodiak.
That name is just ridiculous.
It is. It's amazing.
I once heard an interview with the guy who writes these books. I just stumbled across it late night listening to like one of those, the BBC interview show or something like that. And he seemed like an interesting person.
Yeah.
Kind of somewhere between a normal guy and, you know, kind of a thoughtful writer, but a little bit more normal guy than most.
Yeah.
Well, one of Amazon's big successes has been Jack Ryan, and this seems to be in that vein.
Yeah, it kind of fits. Maybe not, like, I mean, Jack Ryan is very global, and Reacher is very kind of, not mundane, but it is
very
closer.
Similar
it's like
both
street
named,
level.
They're both named Jack, so that's already one link to them.
Yep.
But maybe Amazon is all like, let's adapt these things.
Yeah, they're going to tell you about Jack Reacher, Jack Ryan, and Jack Frost.
And Jack Feitster.
And Jack Feitster.
I'm excited, though. It'll be curious, because I know a lot of people were ho-hum on the casting of Tom Cruise, regardless.
Am I not correct that, like, in the book, one of the things they didn't like, book readers were like, he's supposed to be, like, a big guy.
He's, like...
Like, a big
He's,
bruiser.
Like, 6'6". Yeah. And
Tom Cruise is, like, 5'4".
He's yes. a Lilliputian, but he does work out when he's got movies coming out, so he tries really hard.
What yeah. he needs is stilts.
Yes.
I think he already wears stilts in his shoes.
But wait, can we presume that they're gonna cast somebody who's probably closer to what the book's
image is? I feel like
they
probably will.
Nick, do you have a casting in mind?
I don't. I don't know who I would
Dave
want.
Dave Bautista.
No, and I don't want a wrestler.
Dave Bautista's not a wrestler. He's an MMF fighter.
Yeah.
He wrestles with acting skills.
He wrestles with his acting. He wrestles with not being in Fast and the Furious.
Yes, and instead makes movies like, was it Escape with Sylvester Stallone?
Yep.
And, yep. And let's not forget Stuber.
And, hey, I wanted to see Stuber. I heard mediocre things, but I will be watching.
That's
be
an interesting follow-up. I really wanted to see it. I heard mediocre things.
Well, as opposed to the possibility of I heard terrible things.
Yeah, that's true.
Is a ringing endorsement.
It's no Hobbs and Shaw.
Hey, who's the, I can't suddenly say his name. Who's the guy who played Judge Dredd?
Sylvester Stallone?
Second real Judge Dredd.
Carl Urban.
Could Carl Urban play him?
Carl Urban's kind of busy on Amazon already doing the board.
Oh, yeah. I just meant like as a hypothetical.
Yeah,
this is all made up bullshit anyway.
Yeah, I could see that.
What about the dude, what about Tormund Giantsbane?
He's a... No? Too much hair.
What if they shaved him bald?
I'd be down for it. Let's do
a glistening Tormund.
Let's shave him and put him in the Jack Reacher suit.
Wow.
He didn't even know what happened to him. They just filmed him like a wild animal, eyes darting around as he tried to figure out where he was.
Oh my gosh, there's some weeks where I struggle to come up with this title for this show. This week I have three so far. So
does it have to do with the, like, I don't know, giddy sleeplessness on our part?
It might. I think all of us are running a little low on sleep.
Yeah. All right, so what else we got?
All right. The other big Amazon news is that the director of Godzilla vs. Kong, which I don't know who this guy is, is going to helm an Event Horizon series.
All right.
You know, Event Horizon is one of those movies that has a very strong cult following in sort of horror circles, but that I thought was just okay when I saw it.
I quite like it.
It's a bizarre movie.
Sounds like something you'd like.
It's a bizarre movie.
Actually, I liked the idea behind it. I think I just, like, didn't get pulled into it. The guy who made it it's like arguably his best movie, right?
Yeah, it's not Paul Thomas Anderson, is it? Or is it?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Like, it's one of those, it's close to him. Wait, who's Paul Thomas Anderson?
He's the guy who did Mortal Kombat and all that stuff, right?
It might be him.
Thomas Anderson is...
No, it's not. It's somebody
that's
with
the guy
that.
Who did, like, Boogie Nights.
There's, like,
it?
Another guy who has
right,
that name,
right. Though. It's absolutely not the Boogie
Nights
guy.
It's not
Nights
the Boogie Nights guy, yeah.
Somebody looking it up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up on IMDb. It is not Paul Thomas Anderson, but it is... he has a name like that, Paul W.S. Anderson, something like that.
That sounds right.
Add some W's, add some A's.
Yes. At any rate, an Event Horizon TV show.
Yeah, weird, trippy space horror with kind of Lovecraftian overtones.
Yeah.
Actually, despite, maybe because I wasn't super into the movie, but I liked a lot of the ideas behind it. I think I actually would be more interested in it as a series. It sounds like something that'd be kind of cool to explore over time.
I'm trying to remember. Same. This was like the Lawrence Fishburne and...
Yeah.
Sam Neill,
right.
Yeah, it's...
Good cast, by the way.
I actually think it's a great idea for a TV show. Yeah. So, Paul W.S. Anderson...
Aha!
Uh-huh. Directed Resident Evil...
It's tricky because it looks like Wes Anderson in there.
He directed, and he wrote some of these too, Resident Evil...
Yep,
the first
Soldier...
One?
Yep.
Event Horizon.
He's got a niche.
Mortal Kombat.
Yep.
And a bunch of other really bad things.
Okay.
Alien versus Predator. The Death Race remake. He is by no means a terrible director,
but he is very B grade.
Bad. Yeah.
Very B grade guy. Now, does he have anything to do with the new show, or is that just the movie guy?
No, just the movie credits.
Okay. Yeah. Who's doing the new show? Do we know any specifics?
It's the guy who's doing Kong versus Godzilla. Which
okay.
I don't know much about him. People seem excited about this.
Sounds potentially interesting. Yeah, for sure would want to check it out. Incidentally, just jumping back for one second to Jack Reacher.
Yep.
Nick, are you going to check it out?
Yeah.
That's cool. I feel like it, like, I would watch the trailers to those, and I like Tom Cruise in action movies, and I would think, that looks kind of fun. That looks like a cool role. I think I started to watch one once, and I found it kind of unengaging. But I like the idea well enough that I would potentially be interested in it.
I mean, it depends on how they do it. If it's like a serialized, like, done in ones, or if they actually do like a full book as one season.
Right. What does it go up against?
It's usually, I mean,
the cartels.
There have been that. There are various like
terrorists.
They're not really that. It's not to that level.
White supremacists.
There has been that, I believe. Okay. So there've been villains.
Lone mad bomber. I'm gonna throw out every cliche from every action suspense movie.
There was a sniper.
All right.
Genetically enhanced super soldier played by Idris Elba.
No, we'll be getting to that, though.
Two little bits of TV news here to finish out. One is that HBO has the full cast for Joss Whedon's new show, The Nevers, which is a sci-fi drama following a group of superhero women living in Victorian England. The cast is interesting. It's nobody you're like, oh, that guy's great. But Olivia Williams, who was Bruce Willis's wife in Sixth Sense, who headlined Rushmore, who has most recently been in Counterpart, she's like the lead.
You're also forgetting she was one of the big people in Dollhouse.
Oh yeah, that's who that is. Anyway,
oh, was she like the head of the agency?
Yes.
And I'm going to give you guys all the names because this is as Victorian as it gets.
Uh-huh.
She plays Lavinian Bidlow, who runs the orphanage that's inhabited by the series leads.
By the way, I've liked her in all of those roles that she's been great. In, so she's super talented.
James Norton, who is in Happy Valley and McMafia, who's in The Adaptation of Little Women. I don't know this guy. He's a British actor. He is playing a pansexual club owner named Hugo Swan. We're going to get to all these names because I really, really love them. Tom Riley from Da Vinci's Demon is playing Augustus Augie Bidlow, the brother of William's Lavinia Bidlow. Anne Skelly is portraying the religious never character Penance Adair, the best friend of Donnelly's Amalia True. Ben Chaplin from Legend of Tarzan is Detective Frank Mundy. And Nick Frost is playing underground figure Declan Oren, a.k.a. the Beggar King.
These names all sound ridiculous and dumb, but for the fact that, like, I suspect, like, Shepherd, Book, and Mal and stuff like that would all sound pretty goofy outside of the context of Firefly, in which case they all became iconic and great.
A Victorian superhero women series sounds great to me, and I'm curious to see. I know Whedon gets some heat for being fake feminist these days, but he still has some feminist bona fides. Like, he definitely tries to at least do the... And I hope he doesn't step in it the way Aaron Sorkin sometimes did.
Right.
Where it's like, it comes off as patriarchal bullshit.
Yeah. We'll see. The superhero aspect is kind of the least interesting part to me. But I assume that, I mean, do we think that there's actually going to be costumes and stuff like
no,
that?
I suspect it's going to be like Slayers and like Dollhouse where they have...
Right.
They'll
have very British names like Springheel Jack is at it again and stuff like that.
Yes.
Probably the latter on there.
Finally, a weird one. CBS has announced two Star Trek Picard themed wines.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
So there's two bottle combo packs, a numbered literal limited edition of the United Federation of Planets Special Reserve, Old Vine Zinfandel, and a 2016 Chateau Picard Cru Bourgeois.
I think it's just
from Bordeaux, France.
Well, we'll definitely for my Trek podcast, Tex Trek, we'll definitely have to get loaded on a couple of bottles of that at some point.
Yeah,
and
we'll make sure
and just see what happens.
We'll make sure and post that episode.
You know, there was talk at somebody. There's a Star Trek Mad Libs out there, and I think they did a Trek Mad Libs at one of the panels at Star Trek Las Vegas last week. Like some of the actors and stuff were doing this kind of just on the fly, calling out, getting adjectives and stuff from the audience and all that. So Star Trek Mad Libs plus Picard wine could be the perfect night.
Now I have another title:
Night of Magic, Night of Mystery, Night of Romance.
Okay, so moving on to movie news.
Yep.
Big news, the biggest news, Charlize Theron and Helen Mirren are returning for Fast and Furious 9. That's important.
It's good. That's that. You know, that gives it its credibility.
Yep.
Which is very important that it have the acting credibility so that, you know, when they do the stage adaptation.
Yeah. Oh, God. I would 100% see a stage adaptation of Fast and Furious or a musical.
I imagine like kind of like amusingly cheaply done sort of fake cars on the screen that they would just like hop into, and there's like guys making like sound effects and stuff and like throwing dirt up in the air to make it look like the tires are spinning.
Would you see
stuff?
A high school production of a Fast and Furious?
100%. In fact, I want that now.
Yeah, well, keep this in mind, kids who made the Alien adaptation.
Fast and Furious next. And not Fast and Furious. Fast 5.
And up. Which one was the one where Vin Diesel and The Rock fought?
That's Fast Five.
Yeah. You know how they're like throwing each other through walls and stuff like that? I think that'd be a fun one for kids to do because they could have like these paper walls that they're just going through.
Or how about a perfect adaptation that is like covers Fast the Fast and the Furious all the way through Fast 8.
Really, so like a summation.
So like, yes. Like you get the key scenes, like you would do a what happened before in the Fast and Furious series.
That sounds like a great idea, and then they can just run that in front of the next one that they make.
Yeah, with kids.
Yeah. So I don't know if people know, but we like the Fast and the Furious series. Yeah, it is good.
Yep.
I would say knowingly dumb fun. Yeah. Like, it kind of like revels in its silliness.
They know exactly what they're doing.
And it's kind of always sort of has this, I don't know, this good-heartedness to its silliness. Like, it almost always ends with kind of a happy ending for the characters, where you get the denouement, where you get to see him living it up and kind of living large. And it's just, it's sort of more fun than Bond movies and stuff like that. Yeah. It's kind of like, and yet also like expertly filmed action sequences, really amazing stunts that they do.
You're right, Dave. It is notable that even though dark stuff happens,
yeah, characters get killed and stuff.
Even though one of the lead actors died, they always manage to bring like a happy ending to the characters. Like, they leave them in a good place.
Well, even the death of that character, which was written sort of into the series as him going off to build a family.
Yep.
So they managed to end it within the movie, even though it was a sort of meta farewell to the. Yep. To the actor as well, ended on a sort of a warm note.
And in one of my favorite things about the entire movie series, they named the baby after their very much alive friend Brian as a tribute to the dead actor.
We'll always remember you, Brian, and I'll tell you about it when I call you this weekend. Anyway, so what are we talking about?
Charlize Theron and Helen Mirren are coming back for Fast and Furious.
Right, and so if people don't know, Charlize Theron was the villainess in the previous one.
She has to stay a villain, right? They can't make her a good guy.
And the reason Randy is saying that is because there is a tradition in these movies of, just like in the X-Men, of taking the bad guys and kind of recruiting them.
And I thought that making
Jason Statham,
I thought making Jason Statham Shaw was as far as they could go. Like, he killed one of their best friends, and they just kind of brought him into the crew.
They just sort of forgot about
that.
No, they didn't. They actually, in Hobbs and Shaw, it's mentioned.
Yeah, I know.
They're getting to it. That is what the writer has said.
Okay, we'll want them to bring back that friend.
Charlize Theron, I'm not going to say, because it's okay to spoil Fate.
That was like 4 years ago.
She murders the mother of one of the characters' babies. The mother.
And held the baby hostage.
She's a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's evil.
What if you found out she was under duress, Randy?
Oh my god, what kind of duress?
Nanobots inside her had actually physically altered her brain chemistry.
That's oddly not the craziest thing.
Yeah, see, they've already got a Superman with Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Anyway, a black Superman. Self-identifying.
Well, we don't know who the ultimate villain in Hobbs and Shaw is.
Oh, that's right, true. That's true. We'll get to that.
Nick has a theory that I like.
And then Helen Mirren is also in this as Jason Statham's criminal mom.
She's amazing.
Taking the classy actress, but she's like rocking the Cockney accent.
Yep.
And just having a hell of a time.
She's so great.
She seems to be having a delightful moment.
Yeah. She was introduced in Fate of the Furious, and she's great. And I'm super excited about
that. So, that's good to hear.
By the way, people, if you're weirded out that we're so excited about Fast and Furious movies, you need to start with Fast 5 and go on. It's really worth watching.
Right. That was my experience, and my recommended viewing is to walk into it as in a way, like, this was to me what happened when I like read my first Avengers comic as a kid, and I was like, oh, there's clearly so much of that's happened before, and it was probably very different before. Like, if I had come in as a kid on Stan Lee's Avengers, it wouldn't have worked for me.
No, you would have seen Iron Man and Thor riding on a on car doors while they were pulled water ski style in a truck driven by Captain America.
While Hulk juggled elephants.
Yes, that happened.
So just as I needed to kind of come in on the 80s era one, I came in on the exact Fast and Furious when the series had matured into its proper ridiculousness and become this insane heist, super spy action, borderline superhero movie series where the characters had like really fun relationships and all of that. There was even like retcons in the credits and stuff like that that were actually very entertaining.
And I say watch from the beginning because
ideally I should have done this is watch 5 onward and then go back, and if you want to fill in the gaps and learn your history.
It's the machete order of Fast and Furious.
Right. Yeah. Right, because otherwise they're going to just have to go and watch one where they just steal cars.
Yeah.
And they need to get to the place where they parachute out of planes in cars and do all that crazy stuff. It needs to win them over if they're skeptical. Fast 5 is the one.
And Fast 5 is what finally brought me on board.
Yeah.
All right. Other news. Apparently Star Wars is not releasing any movies for a while.
Yeah, I saw this. They specifically, the way they phrased it was that there's nothing going up against Marvel Phase 4.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because they weren't up against it. Like, there's 12 months in the year.
They're also owned by the same parent company of
Disney.
I think
this is them just kind of backing off.
Taking a breather. Yeah, I think that, so they're going to wrap up the third one. Who knows how it'll go over with people, but I bet it's going to do pretty good.
But it does sound like that.
Do you think, Randy, that they're doing what we've seen in comics before, where they like take
rest of property for
a property for like 3 to 5 years and then bring it back?
Not completely, because they're going to be having the Mandalorian running on Disney Plus,
right? But essentially, they're like seeding the franchise to television for a time, and like just completely dropping the big budget
stuff. You know what the strangest thing about this for me is? It's not like Star Wars is going away. They just launched a giant theme park around it. It feels weird to not have movies supporting it. It's like they're accepting that, no, Star Wars is nostalgia right now.
I wonder. I don't think they need that sort of constant reminder of Star Wars. I think the theme park is its own kind of thing, but for people just to go.
Star Wars is so entrenched in pop culture, it doesn't need to be pushed.
Exactly.
It's in our blood.
I'm honestly a little sad about this, because I think that I was a little let down by Last Jedi, let down by Rogue One. I really liked Solo, which apparently did not do well.
Yeah.
And I want more Star Wars. Like, I had gotten to a point where I had written Star Wars off a couple times.
Yeah.
And they had finally dragged me back in.
No, wait a second. If you said you were disappointed, shouldn't you be thinking that it's a good to rest the properties?
I want more right now while I'm in the mood for it.
Oh, I see. I did wonder if they might choose to push Mandalorian even harder than we think they're going to, which is probably going to be pretty hard since it's on Disney streaming. But if that might like get almost a movie level push, the way Game of Thrones did.
It's the only Star Wars. It's the only place you get Star Wars.
And they are putting a lot of money into it. Yeah. I mean,
Remind me, is the showrunner
Jon Favreau? Yeah.
Is he writing, directing?
Both. He's writing and directing at least the pilot.
I think the pilot,
right? And then showrunner for the series.
Yeah,
and that's pretty big.
Yeah, it is.
Because doesn't that have like a ton of different directors, like Bryce Dallas Howard?
Yeah, it's got
Taika Waititi. Yeah.
Has Bryce Dallas Howard directed before?
I don't think so. I think this is her first.
That's interesting.
Outing.
Yeah. I would not have guessed that her first outing would be a Star Wars TV show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like Bryce Dallas Howard has any directing in her family, so that's not going to go very well.
I forget the connection at times. Right now, I forgot that. So yeah, of course, directing's in her blood.
Yeah.
What else?
The one with tiny director nanobots.
along finally, with the voiceover skills, I assume.
Finally, Andy Serkis is going to direct the Venom sequel, and that's a weird sentence.
Yeah,
it's a little bit odd. Maybe not that odd for our times.
He has directed
Andy Serkis
before.
Who many of us will remember as the motion capture source of Gollum and every single video game character and other movie character that did mocap for the rest of existence.
He just bounces around and does whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever he
does. They just always have those little electrode things on him just in case he does anything.
That's not even a suit.
we're gonna make a movie about a guy going to the grocery store. We want to mocap, use your mocap.
He's like, okay.
Yeah.
He just turns it on and just goes about his day.
Sounds right.
I mean, he has directed before.
But nothing big.
No,
right?
Nothing big. This will be his biggest.
He did second unit directing on, what was...
I thought Lord of the Rings, but...
That could be. Could have even also... Or was it like The Hobbit?
It was The Hobbit.
That's what it was. Yeah, that rings a bell for me, too. This is pretty big. Previously it was directed by the director who... his name is going to escape me, who did Zombieland. First Venom.
Oh, right.
Was.
Yeah.
And is doing Zombieland, too?
Yes, I think he's doing Double Tap.
And Randy has not seen Venom, nor has any desire to, but I know Nick and I are fans.
I have seen the last 5 minutes after the credits.
Yeah, we like to make him watch the appearance of Cletus Kasady.
It's the best thing I've seen.
And I like to torture Randy by saying Venom will be in the MCU soon.
Yeah, Venom and Deadpool. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, they'll probably be Avengers.
Oh, God.
Cap is going to have to deal with that.
No, Cap's an old man now.
He needs a... He's like, well, yeah, they're like, without Cap on board, we had to bring on board the Lethal Protector.
Jesus.
Which, by the way, I think may actually be... Is that the subtitle of this, or did they just say that Andy Serkis was reading that, I think, as like... Or
I think
he
that.
Did like a photo op, essentially, with it. But here's the thing. I am mildly disappointed in the sense that I don't know whether to trust his directing skills. Obviously, he's got some amazing talent for motion capture.
Can he bring the auteur's eye that Venom 2 requires?
I will say one of the things I liked about Venom was that it had a little bit more of that weird, quirky personality to it than sort of the standard superhero movie.
Are you forgetting his quirky personality as Ulysses Claw? Can he bring those sensibilities to directing? I think so.
Ulysses Claw directing Eddie Brock.
Yes. It's a little weird.
But I also don't, although I like the Venom movie, it reminded me in a weird way a lot of like Batman 89, just in the sense of its weirdness.
Yeah.
It wasn't too devoted to the comic, but it surprised me by being good on its own merits or fun on its own merits.
As long as they get Eminem to come back and record another song.
Nick, why he's trying to bring the audience down.
He's recorded a Carnage rap this time.
Yes.
Here's what I think. Who's the Lil Nas? Is that the guy who did the Old Town Road?
Yeah.
I think that guy needs to do it and then make it legit. But it needs to be crazy. It needs to be like a little country hip-hop fusion for Venom 2. Think about it, people out there.
All right, and on that note...
But wait, hold on. I was just going to say, this is the one that'll have Carnage in it, right?
Yeah, I would
It has to
so.
Be because that's what they set up with Crazy Woody Harrelson.
What if that's all there ever is?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't see Venom in the theater. I waited for it to hit digitally.
Yep.
I will probably go see Venom 2 in the theater. So.
I did see Venom in the theater. I will probably see Venom 2 in the theater.
So.
But it needs to probably... I need to at least hear... Some decent reviews, or even if it's like sort of like the Venom received sometimes a not so bad it's good, but so weird it's good occasionally. But I don't have a ton invested in it. So if the movie second one happens to tank, it's not going to break my heart.
We're going to get an hour and 45 minutes of hearing what's his name talk weird. So
yeah, an hour and 45 minutes of Tom Hardy going through puberty.
Yeah.
Dave, what's weirder that you are going to go see Venom 2 in the theater, or that I saw Deadpool 2 in the theater?
Man, it is strange times we're living in.
It is strange times. We are living in a failing computer simulation, paper. And on that note, we'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, August 7th, and, Dave, why don't you kick us off with the biggest launch of this week?
Yeah, it is literally the largest, I don't know how many, what the page count on
712.
It's something like that. Marvel's Absolute Carnage. It's a little pricier than normal, but I will say you do get your page count worth. And the art from Ryan Stegman is absolutely the best I've seen from him, and I already liked him anyway.
Yeah.
Has he been drawing Venom prior to this?
Yep. He's been working on Venom completely with Donny Cates. And
so it's basically the Venom team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is, honestly, I bought a Venom trade because of Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman. So that is the crazy world we're living in. and I've liked it. So the whole time he was working on Venom, the two of them, they've been rebuilding the mythology of it so that there's, like, huge reveals about the god of the symbiotes, Null, is it, right?
Yeah.
The Cult of Carnage, which has been trying to resurrect him.
Over the past, like, year, yep. I think.
And I read something in here that's... I was a little behind in the Venom comic that I guess has been revealed that Null, is he, like, imprisoned on what we think of as the symbiote planet, but is not, in fact, a planet, but billions of symbiotes forming this circle as a prison for him,
it's
which is a kind of cool, crazy metal idea.
Hey, guys, do you think Donny Cates likes heavy metal?
I'm going to guess both heavy metal and certain recreational substances, just as a hypothetical guess. But he is building up the mythology in a cool way, and it's all sort of coming to a head in this one as Carnage has been resurrected. And Eddie Brock is, at the time of the beginning of this, separated from the symbiote and going through some difficulties as a result of that, and also trying to figure out how to tell his son he's his son.
Which is weird.
Because he thinks he's just his older brother.
Right.
Now, there was I know I did read about that in some of the comics, but because I'm a little hot behind in Venom, I don't know exactly how it's played out, but it seems like there's a decent... There's some real emotional weight to it, I think.
Yeah, I think I stopped right before kind of... All that got into all that, but I was like, I'm not sure I like this for Eddie, because I think there was some like thoughts like he wasn't his son and like he had killed somebody and this, I don't know, there was some baggage that I thought was like, oh, that doesn't really help Eddie be like a good guy.
Right, he's trying to figure out. I remember in that issue, like, how to tell his son, who we thought was maybe just his little brother at the time, about something kind of unforgivable he did.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if I need that.
But I will say in this, and I don't remember what that exact thing was, that the symbiote itself has been messing with his memories.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's used to explain away some continuity they didn't like, or because, to drive that rift between them, like that was sort of the plot point that led to it. But suffice to say, he's got a beard showing that he's gone through troubles, just like Cap in the MCU movies. And he's traveling with the kids, so there's, I don't know, I'm going to say a slight lone wolf and cub vibe. And they, there's a really cool action sequence at the beginning of this, set in a subway station when Carnage comes looking for him. And Carnage looks awesome. He is super elongated, like almost with the elongated quality of, like, H.R. Giger's alien design. Yeah. And through, like, the skin, you can see these bony protrusions, like, at his elbows and stuff, so that it looks like his arms are, like, 10 feet long, or 7 or 8 feet, anyway.
It's not like the Carnage we know. This is, like, a new incarnation of him,
and he's much scarier. Yeah, there's some backstory stuff that, you know, it's fun to read about, where the idea is that each time a symbiote possesses somebody or, like, bonds with them, a small trace of its DNA gets left in them, and they call them, like, the codex.
Codices.
And Carnage is going around, and is he killing the people? Is he drawing that out of them? He's trying to recapture that little DNA.
I think it's a combination of either killing or turning.
Right. So there's, in a way, there's a race on to anybody who has been a symbiote. Carnage is going after, and Venom is kind of stepping in between. And after this very cool action sequence, they have to go, and I think I'm going to go ahead and say who he goes to call on for help.
Yeah.
Because it ended up being pretty interesting. He has to go to Peter Parker.
Yep.
Peter Parker with. Does he? Yeah, he knows his identity, I guess, right?
Well, and also the Venom symbiote. I mean, like,
yeah, it's like you would basically have to at that point. And there's actually some pretty interesting conversation in there, as well as some humorous stuff. As they go to, are they in a restaurant, like a cafe?
Diner.
And Spider-Man's just wearing his costume while they're talking and having this actually fairly serious conversation that goes over some interesting ground. There's like some serious stuff about the kid. And Peter's got some thoughts about that. He's like, he knows how very important it is for a kid to know the nature of their father.
Yeah,
I thought that was a good scene.
I was a little worried that, because I don't think we've seen Donny Cates write Spider-Man.
Right.
And I wasn't sure if he would have the right voice for him.
I think he got him pretty good.
He did. He gets the kind sort of this,
he's still kind of like
the joke,
instinctively snarky.
Yeah, but there's the heart behind him, which Peter needs.
Right.
And
the sequences where they talk about Eddie's kid and stuff like that, I thought really brought that out.
Yeah.
And there is some funny stuff going on, and like the dude at the cafe or whatever just thinks he's there like for Comic-Con or something.
Yep.
It's just like, it's one of those things where Spider-Man can hide in plain sight because people just think it's a dude in a costume.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that Bendis did that I really didn't like, was that he would have the characters like out of, and the movies do this too for obvious reasons, but characters out of costume.
Yeah.
Whereas in comics, they're just in costume all the time because that's how they're recognizable. It's
right.
Just the normal thing.
And it's kind of a cool pop visual too.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's actually a whole lot more that happens in this, and some cool plots and some cool
Giant action sequences.
Symbiote mythology. Yeah. It is a big story, and yeah, there's like some crazy action at the end. I think people who like Venom and Carnage and wanted to see some fairly brutal fight scenes and things like that are gonna get it, but they're also it's a more thoughtful story than you might expect, which is good because I don't think I was ready to watch it if it was just symbiotes fighting.
Yeah, I think I don't love Venom and Carnage as much as some people, but I really appreciate the kind of backstory and sort of giving these characters a bit more to them.
Yeah. I have a thing where I actually sometimes maybe a little overly like that when I see a character who I used to not like or at least be at the best be neutral on, and they find something in them that makes me interested in them.
Yeah.
Because I want all the characters in the Marvel Universe that are at least the major players and stuff like that to be characters I dig. And Venom was one where usually when he would show up, I'd be like, oh, God, it's Venom.
Yeah. But Venom
but now, like, now I'm kind of interested in most of his appearances.
And also, Venom as a father is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
It's a weird idea.
Yep.
But...
And there is, of course, some of that, like, the Eddie versus symbiote interaction and dialogue, and including a weird scene where Eddie is, like, unconscious and injured, and the symbiote kind of takes over,
yeah.
And his son is talking to him, and the symbiote's like, I know, it's like, pipe down, kid, and he's like, what? And he's like, it's me, the symbiote, talking. So it has a little bit of that craziness that I liked about the movie, yeah. And so it was weirdly, darkly funny at times. So, yeah, Absolute Carnage is slated to be, what, how long is the miniseries?
I don't know.
6 or 7, I think.
Okay, and then there's going to be some tie-in series and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't generally like those, but also I've read some of the those Venom one-shots and things like that, yeah. Like the thing that had the Cult of Carnage and a few of those other ones. And the overall track record of those kind of lead-in ones have been pretty good. I think way back when, the one that had the Vietnam one,
yeah.
Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty well-liked. So so this, surprisingly, I find myself with an interest in the Venom Carnage miniseries.
My pick is Die number 6. Which is the long-awaited return of Kieran Gillen and Stephanie Hahn's dark gothic D&D Jumanji book.
Yep.
I came to this book late. Nick's been on board from the very beginning.
Yep.
I'm going to claim it as mine the same way that Dave claimed whatever it was, whatever book. Oh,
Criminal?
Black Hammer, maybe?
Maybe.
Whatever book you claimed that you're like.
Oh, no, it was not Fade Out. What was the Brubaker? Kill or Be Killed.
No, it was definitely like Black Hammer, where Dave had not been reading it, and he came to it late, and then
I guess Kill or Be Killed, I was at least on board from the beginning.
Yeah, okay.
But now, Randy, when you said this returns, so they had done 5 issues, the equivalent of the first trade, yep. And then they took
a long break.
Like, what, like 3 months, six
three
months?
3 months.
Has it only been 3 months?
I think it's been 3. I think they're doing the saga.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think it feels longer than it was.
It felt like a long break. Anyway, this is my first time reading this in single issues, and I was a little worried about it. I was thinking that it might be a book that reads better in trade. This first issue back is heart-wrenching.
God.
It's a focus on one of the characters and sort of what she's having to give up to help the team. It's got a little bit of that don't split the party thing to it. It's got some emotional stakes. It's got some beautiful artwork.
Yeah,
it's
I saw them mention the don't split the party thing.
Yeah.
Only instead of just being a D&D kind of trope where it's just like, oh, don't split the party, you might go up against a monster.
Yeah.
That's there's emotional resonance too, because yep. Like splitting the party means like sort of the severing of friendships or personal connections.
It also gets into the weirdness of the because Die is not just D&D, this character has like a cyberpunk element to them.
Yep. I see that there's like this conquering force called like Eternal Prussia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she in particular, her deal is that she made a deal with these basically android entities who are like cyber fae, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting combination of sort of the warlock that makes a pact for magical power, but it's for sort of magical cybernetic technology power. It's an interesting blend, and I really like it, and the sort of sacrifice she has to make is pretty heart-wrenching.
Yes.
I really dug this. If you've not been reading Die, it's definitely worth getting that $10 first trade and then jumping in on this, because it's a great single issue.
Well, and also in the back matter, they're adding in little bits and pieces for the RPG as
yep.
well, which
yep.
I thought was really cool. And I thought Kieran Gillen's backup letter was really interesting as well.
Yeah.
Kind of diving into sort of the themes of the issue.
Nick, your pick?
I am picking a book, the second issue of Lois Lane, which I actually really enjoyed the first one. I think it was during our downtime when we were podcasting.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Did
we ever talk about that or the Jimmy Olsen one?
No, I don't think we did.
No,
okay.
But
we ended up liking kind of both of them, and for very different reasons.
Very different reasons. This one is written by Greg Rucka, art by Mike Perkins. I kind of worship at the cult of Greg Rucka because I tend to like most of the things he does.
Yep.
But this is sort of a kind of Lois Lane story, ferreting out kind of government problems. her is a badass reporter. Dealing with sort of the fallout between a picture of seeing her kiss Superman and how that affects her relationship with Clark in the public eye, which I thought was a cool little twist.
Is the idea that people saw that, of course, people don't know that
she
married to him, so they're like, oh, she's a two-timer,
she's cheating on...
Oh, that's interesting. So look at a little bit of female celebrity-dom there
yeah.
and how, like, any little thing and you could be cast out as, like, the whore.
Yep.
But Rucka has also brought back his character, Rene Montoya, the Question,
mm-hmm.
As sort of her go-get, Lois's sort of man on the street trying to gather up information. which I think is a great idea for Renee Montoya, and I love to see her back in the world because I missed her.
Yeah, I don't think any of us like wanted to see her necessarily replace Vic Sage.
No.
Although, am I correct that Sage is back?
Yes,
gonna be back for Black Label at least.
Right,
so.
Yeah. but they've done good stuff with her, and also the thing is, I wasn't really like. Vic Sage wasn't being used.
Yeah.
And so
right.
Yeah, I don't really mind him being off the page, and Montoya is a cool question.
But it's also sort of the character beats that I think Rucka gets that really kind of enamor me towards him, because I love his Perry White. His Perry White is such iconic.
Does he have integrity?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And I'm
still stinging from poor Lawrence Fishburne having to portray no integrity
this
Perry
is like
White
a thousand
of, the,
times.
Of the movies.
But I also like the little things that he gives, like Lois. Like, she's the amazing reporter, but what she does, she types too fast, so there's some problems with her like,
typos and stuff. Yeah,
and he's editing it, like commenting over the phone, and just the back and forth between, because they're friends, but also, you know, colleagues on sort of the same level, they have that mutual respect. And it's just this kind of really
Perry
cool
White,
relationship.
Perry White is also the kind of person who can take a shot at her and call her out.
Yes.
And she has to...
Very much so.
And she'll roll with it. You know, the spelling thing, of course, goes way back to this 70s Superman movie where he's snarkily, he's like, there's not two P's in rapist, Lois. A weird gag, but Mario Puzo did write that movie.
Yeah.
and then there's a relationship between her and Clark and Superman, and I actually think it is a example of a great sort of, you know, relationship.
Right, they handle it kind of in a pretty mature way in this, which is, I mean, really, that's the hallmark of a lot of what Rucka does, is a sort of mature approach.
But sort of the underpinning of the mystery of her investigating sort of government conspiracies and stuff
is this
also...
specifically, like, is this kind of like what would feel like real, more like real-world conspiracies, or is this like DC stuff, like Intergang
it feels a little more real-world than anything.
Okay.
And that might be Rucka sort of exercising some demons that he's got with the real world right now.
That's right, there's some demons in the real world.
You mean Rucka, a politically active person, feels like things went wrong in 2016?
You know, maybe so. But there are some ramifications for the DC universe in this, and I just think it's... overall, just a fantastic book.
And art is insane. Who's the artist?
Mike Perkins. And he's great. I've loved him since Captain America.
Was Mike Perkins among the many people that worked on Brubaker's Cap Run during the Winter Soldier arcs?
He was like one of the main ones.
One of the main ones.
So if you can picture how amazing that looked, that's
well,
that
and also
quality
the cool thing
art.
About this, it's not an ongoing. It's set out as a 12-issue miniseries, and I think that is a perfect thing, and... I really, really enjoyed it.
Very cool.
What else is on your stack?
The rest of the stuff on my stack, there is the House of X number 2. This is a huge issue. Lots of big things happening in this, but I will not say anything because I can't even talk about it without spoiling things.
Right,
well,
that's why it was going to be your pick, but you couldn't talk about it.
Exactly. the Batman 76, which continues the City of Bane. Some interesting developments in that. There is the Future Foundation number 1, which is sort of a return to what Matt Fraction created in his Fantastic Four run, that sees a lot of the Power Pack, you know, return with Dragon Man and Leech and Artie for more new adventures. Then there's, I didn't get a chance to read this, but I'm excited to, the second issue of Jason Aaron's Sea of Stars. It's kind of father-son relationship book set in kind of the far-flung future. And then there was Savage Avengers number 4, which was another kick-ass issue with a group of the toughest and roughest Marvel heroes battling Cullen Goth. And Conan
with an assault rifle on the cover.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Dave, what else you got?
Let's see. So there's a new Island of Dr. Moreau comic, which I didn't get around to reading, but looked interesting. It had the artist from Lock and Key on it.
Gabriel Rodriguez.
Yeah, and it looked really beautiful. I see elements of P. Craig Russell in his art and inking style in particular. But it's, I believe, a closely based on the original book, but it does also look like tweaked, but it's like a period piece and all that
stuff. Is
anyone
that looks like Val Kilmer?
Thankfully, no. The demons of that movie have been exorcised. Let's see. I did not read this, but back in the day when we were first getting going, the comic Lenore from Roman Dirge was a big sort of goth kind of humor comic about a little dead girl.
Yep.
And that is back out with a new series from Titan that's in color. Let's see. Sinestro's got a miniseries that I have not gotten around to reading yet.
Just a one-shot.
It's just a one-shot?
There's a series of You're the Villain one-shots.
Lex Luthor has tasked certain villains to do certain things.
My understanding when I was reading up on this is that his task is to go kill the old gods.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty cool.
I mean, who else you're going to get other than Sinestro?
And I know, just from the cover, I believe he also has the Indigo Lantern Spectrum, or Violet Lantern. I forget which one it is, but... He is tapping into that power as well as his normal fear power. Let's see. Jeff Lemire has a new book called Berserker Unbound from Dark Horse. This is truly his homage to like the savage sort of Conan era. With Mike Deodato, whose virtue we have sung on many occasions, doing really, really beautiful art that will remind you of some of the best Conan art of old. There is a particular hook and twist to this, and I will just say, I won't get into what it is, but this is, it starts out with a Conan type warrior who's actually found a wife and had a kid, and is at least somewhat changed by it. They have become sort of the driving force of his world, and things end up, he ends up in a very different place, let's just say, by the end of the thing than where he begins.
But I know with Lemire, things are going to be different, and it'll go to some interesting places.
Yeah.
But right now, there's that, but Mike Deodato's artwork is just insane.
It's also a little bit interesting that it's just because, as is often the case, Lemire doesn't work with sort of the standard ratings, so if you always want to see Conan drop the F-bomb at last, now, he's not actually Conan, but he's close. Let's see, third issue of Transformers Ghostbusters, continuing the team up with the Ghostbusters with the Ectotron, Autobot, who and the fallout of the stuff with Starscream's ghost, and then there's also the fourth issue of the Batman TMNT series, which has them having. What they talked about in the previous issue, had to recruit the Shredder. Is he the Shredder?
He's just Shredder.
Recruit Shredder to help them in their trying to fix the merged worlds problem and the Krang, anti-monitor. they had to basically call on their worst enemy. Randy, what else you got?
So, Deceased number 4 came out. This book is dark and mean, and the only reason I like it is because Tom Taylor writes it, and so the character stuff is good. It is weird to me that Tom Taylor, who is such a sort of optimistic writer, has settled into this place where he does terrible, awful things in the DC Universe, but it really works. It's so much smarter and better than what Marvel Zombies was, which was this goofy thing. I like Marvel Zombies fine.
Yeah, but it's like the B movie.
Yeah.
This is a tentpole like big blockbuster.
I haven't been keeping up with it, but I know that he used when he kind of made his name on the Injustice comic.
Yeah.
He took the very dark, almost like ridiculously dark premise of it.
Yeah.
And used it as a way to explore characters and morality and all these things.
And he's doing the same thing.
And it was a deeper cut than anybody could have guessed that he would do.
And he's working with some of the same characters he explored there, which is like especially Green Arrow, Black Canary, two of my favorite characters.
Oh my god, you were flipping through it though, and I saw somebody with just like, is that just like a giant hole in their head?
Yep.
Good
that
lord.
Was.
Yep. That was a... graphically rendered.
Yeah, there's a point at which Superman is arguing. He's like, they're not zombies. It's we don't need to kill them. And one of their characters is like, no, they're worse, and he kills them. But he actually knows.
Okay.
So. Black Cat number 3 is a ton of fun. It is the second part of the heist of Doctor Strange's mansion. It features a running gag between Doctor Strange's ghost dog and Black Cat of mistaken identity that cracked me up every time I saw it. This book is a delight, and I like heist books. I like cat burglar type characters, and I'm just really enjoying this. It gives me that same rush that I had when Domino's book. A lot of my favorite Marvel books came out this week. Black Cat, Daredevil number 9, which is more of like Matt Murdock's having struggled with, he's trying to give up Daredevil. He's struggling with the things he did, but he still wants to do good in the world with his abilities. It opens with a 4-page sequence of Matt Murdock and Reed Richards playing chess in the park and discussing whether or not there's a god.
Huh? Sounds interesting. I know that it is a fairly serious series. It is not one of the lighter-hearted Marvel books right now.
No, it's really, really good. Chip Zdarsky is doing amazing stuff. And the artist whose name I don't recognize, Julian Totino Tedesco, maybe? No, that's a cover artist. It's Lalit Kumar Sharma. New artist to me.
Yeah.
Really, really nice. I like it a lot. Immortal Hulk number 22 continues to be great. There's stuff going on with Gamma Flight. There's stuff going on with Betty and with Bruce. And there's this new evil bad guy. And this book is fantastic. It's the best Hulk book in years and years. And Invisible Woman number 2 sees Sue Storm and Black Widow teaming up for an espionage caper in Madripoor. As it turns out, Invisible Woman has worked part-time for S.H.I.E.L.D. all this time. And that's a concept I love. And Mark Waid's doing a lot of great stuff with it.
Sue Storm?
Yeah.
So pre-marriage?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
Wait, she didn't have her powers.
Yes, she did. They got married after they were the FF.
Oh yeah, that's true. I forgot.
So now she's Sue Richards now, but this ties back to her time as Sue Storm as a as a spy.
Very cool.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.